o ko ka aha. Inahi kuleana I mua o kea, aha, oho o kolo kolo ki ki hano hano o ka moku aina o Hawaii. E naoi mai, e malio mai, e lohi ia ka leo. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons having any business before this Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii, draw nigh. Give your attention and you shall be heard. E noho I lalo. Please be seated.
Case number SCWC-18-0000332, State of Hawaii versus Israel Vega Malave. Arguing for the petitioner, Emmanuel G. Guerrero. Arguing for the respondent, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney Sonia P. McCullen. Argument on the merits.
Justice and Honorable Associate Justices. My name is Emmanuel Guerrero, and I represent the petitioner, Israel Vega Malave. I'm going to first address the issue of the subject matter jurisdiction, just as I presented it in the application for writ before this court. The case was had in family. And in order to, first of all, subject matter jurisdiction cannot be waived. It can be addressed at any time. It's not an issue of plain error. It's an issue of jurisdiction. Personal jurisdiction, on the other hand, can be waived. But this is an issue of the court, the family court's jurisdiction to hear the case to begin with. So with that being said, the facts of the case to establish the jurisdiction of the family court is undisputed. There was no facts made by the family court for the family court to establish its jurisdiction under the requirement of the statute. Jurisdiction of the courts is by statute. 571.14a1 makes it very clear that family court's jurisdiction is defined. And in this particular case, we have the Alagao case. The Alagao case tells us that in order for the family court to have jurisdiction over certain criminal charges, it must fall into one of the categories under the statute. And in this case, one, they have to be parents, parent-child relation, legal parents, biological parent. That's not the case here. The petitioner is not the biological father of the complainant. The petitioner has never been designated or authorized or classified by any courts as being the legal father of the complainant or a guardian of the complainant. The only issue is the ICA attempts to tell us that looking at the facts, he was a stepfather. Looking at the facts that was presented at court, he must have had physical custody, which is one of the basis to establish family court jurisdiction.
Mr. Guerrero, is your position that it's the court's responsibility to find jurisdiction? Or is it the fact finder?
It's the court.
Well, that's not what our law says, and that's not what the statute says.
Well,
let me finish.
Okay,
701.114,
yes.
Proof beyond a reasonable doubt, the fact finder finds jurisdiction, venue, and statute of limitations.
That is correct. But if you take a look at the record in this case, moving forward, to address that issue as to the fact finder, the fact finder in this case was never given the responsibility of making that determination.
That's Very true. And what have our cases said when it's not given to the fact finder? There's several cases that have addressed this.
Your Honor, I'm not quite, I did not go that far in terms of what would happen. I'm not aware of it. I'm sorry.
Okay. What we've done is if the facts are undisputed in the record, which I think was the first sentence that you said, there's clearly evidence in the record that establishes that he was a guardian or a person having legal or physical custody. It's undisputed, as you said in the record. And what our cases have said is, look, if the court doesn't instruct on that, if it's undisputed, it can be harmless beyond a reasonable doubt, just like the way we deal with all other sorts of errors, unless it's structural.
Well, when I say it's undisputed in the fact that the evidence presented by the government and accepted by the ICA, it's undisputed that, yes, he did care for the child, that he, at some point in time, the petitioner, being the stepfather, had to watch the children, pick them up from school at all times. But it's also undisputed that the minor, the complainant, stated that he's not my father.
Well, Mr. Guerrero, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but assuming that jurisdiction applies here and looking at the facts, isn't it your position that the facts in this case provide a rational basis for instruction on sexual assault in the third degree for counts 1 through 3?
That is correct.
And can you explain what that factual basis is?
Well, the factual basis would be that the ICA, for example, relied upon the cases of Abdon and I think Bernhardt. And in those cases, it always states that, first of all, they recognize that sex assault 3 is a lesser included offense of sex assault 1. The cases that they cited and which we stated in our application is that there is contact prior to penetration.
So, in other words, if there's contact before penetration, we're going to have a principle that the jury's always instructed. What about assault? Does that apply for assault too, and for murder, and for every other offense?
Well,
if there's physical contact.
If there's a basis for it, yes. And in this case, there was a basis for it.
Well, I'm not sure if you're saying that as a matter of law, every time sex assault 1 is alleged, sex assault 3 is a lesser, or whether you're saying it depends on the facts. But with respect to the second argument, what about the facts in this case would suggest that there's a basis for sex assault 3 for counts 1 through 3?
Well, the facts in this case was the complainant witness testified and acknowledged that it may have just been contact. She testified that it was inappropriate contact. She clarified her statement that it may have been just contact.
Was that her testimony at trial, that it was just contact? I thought it was significantly more substantial than this contact for at least 3 of the charges in this case.
But she also testified and made a clarification on cross-examination that when she was asked, for example, by the officer who met her at the school to define what penetration or sex means, she said it's contact in part. But I do acknowledge she did say there was penetration. There's no question about it.
Does it make a difference, Mr. Guerrero, that the jury did not believe the complaining witness with respect to certain counts? In other words, with respect to count 2, I believe it was a hung jury, right?
That is correct.
Which would mean that at least there wasn't unanimity about whether the complaining witness was telling the truth. So if that's the case, would that be a basis upon which to find that there was a rational basis for a lesser included instruction?
No. And the reason for that is this. On the way the trial proceeded and the way the facts came out, it wasn't as clear as it should be. The timing, for example, the testimony of the complainant, did change a certain, did not, not necessarily change, but it was not consistent.
Well, maybe I'm not being clear on my question. I was wondering whether your argument is that the jury could have found, say, for example, in count two, the jury, if there was a lesser, the jury might have found that she wasn't necessarily either telling the truth or clear about whether there was penetration with respect to the penis in her mouth, but perhaps there was a contact. That was my question. Is that your point?
No, my point is this. The counts two, each individual count is an individual count in of itself. In this particular case, whether the jury was unable to make a decision on those individual counts would not have any factual impact in terms of whether or not count one should have a lesser included offense. We have to take a look at count one on its own.
Yes. Complaining witness testified about what normally would happen in the incidents of sexual penetration. And she testified that he would be on top of her, he would penetrate her, he would be touching her breasts or her buttocks. Is that what you're referring to? And do you think that does that provide a basis for the lesser included offense? And if so, there were instructions given on sex assault three, so which count four referred to touching the breast, count five to touching the buttock. Wouldn't there be, even if there should have been a sex assault as a lesser included offense, wouldn't it be harmless in light of those instructions having been given?
No, it would not, Chief Justice. And the reason for that is this. As you can see by the jury being unable to come to a decision with respect to the individual counts of sex three, it's clear that the jury at some point had some concerns about the veracity or the credibility of the witness. Count one, the sex assault first charges, the jury should have been given that opportunity to consider the lesser included offense because the complainant did testify that maybe they were inappropriate contact.
But they didn't reach a verdict on those counts. They had those charges in front of them, and they didn't reach a verdict. So what's the harmfulness of any error in the guilty lesser included offense? They had that option because they convicted their counts 4 or 5.
They specifically wasn't able to come to a decision. And the reason they couldn't come to a decision is I think we can all agree that they had some concerns about the witness's testimony, about the witness's ability to testify truthfully, if that's the proper word. The specific counts to those sex three were touching of the buttocks and I believe touching of the breast.
4 and 5,
yes. So clearly we know that the jury was unable to make a decision on those counts because they had some concerns. And on the remaining counts, I think if you take a look at the record, it doesn't tell us that the touching of the buttocks was part of the penetration. Because the sex assault three instructions were limited only to those counts which the jury was unable to make a decision. The jury should be instructed on each count of all of the proper applicable lesser included offense. They should have been. They weren't. It's too much of a leap to say that because there's an instruction someplace else on another count, that that should apply to the charge where no instruction was given. Fair is fair, right is right. The jury must be instructed on all of the counts, not just portions of the, not just partial counts. And to simply say that, hey, it's a sex assault jury instruction, it's good to go, it's not good to go.
So what is the basis in your mind? What should be the basis for giving the sex assault jury instruction? Should it be given essentially every time there's a sex assault one because necessarily there's some form of contact that would precede that, or do we need to look for some specific evidence of sexual contact as opposed to penetration?
Well, I think we take the premise that it should be looked at first, and then there should be some sort of, as Justice Wilson tells us, this has to be some rational basis, which are some facts. And in this case, it is our position that there are facts. There are facts. The ICA tells us that there's no facts in this case of any kind of contact prior to the penetration because the defendant did not testify. The defendant does not have to testify. There was testimony, there was evidence presented that there must have been contact prior to the penetration. The ICA's decision tells us that maybe if he testified that he had contact before the penetration, it should be okay.
Mr. Guerrero, yes. Thank you for focusing on this question about the extent to which there's evidence of touching of the breasts and the buttocks during the period of the penetration, because it's my understanding, and looking at the transcript at pages 80 and 84, that the complaining witness did provide testimony that when penetration was taking place, there would be a touching of the breasts and the buttocks. And is it your point that that is evidence that would support giving a lesser because the jury might have found that there was touching of the breasts and the buttocks, but not necessarily penetration?
Yes. And when the witness testified that there was touching prior to the penetration, doesn't mean that that was the counts which the jury was unable to make a decision, because that is not what the instructions that were given to the jury. There was no specific instruction telling them that count three and count four, the sex threes, were in fact the lesser of sex assault one charges. The jury, which was unable to make a decision on those sex assault three, that's clear evidence that they had some concerns about this witness. And if they did have concerns about this witness, the testimony of the witness, which tells us that there was some touching prior to the penetration, that's the rational basis for the sex assault third instruction. Now,
Mr. Guerrero, do you think it's problematic that sex assault three has an additional requirement that sex assault one does not? Meaning that she was not married to the defendant?
I don't believe so.
Why is that a lesser if it has an additional element?
The essence of the charge here is sexual assault on a minor. Excuse me, sexual assault on a person under the age of 14. The harm, the degree of harm on sex assault one is the actual penetration. And the sex assault three is the touching of the sexual contact. The fact that, as a matter of fact, you know what, the sex assault three, I believe the statute has been modified, has been changed to no longer include, I believe, the marriage of the parties, unless I am mistaken. So.
Wasn't that in the charge, though?
Yes, that was in the charge.
Mr. Guerrero, what would be the incidents that the complaining witness stated that there were acts of penetration? What would be the rational basis to conclude that she was wrong about the sexual penetration but correct about sexual contact? Well, why would a jury come to a conclusion that only part of what she was saying? I understand in the early incident she testified that in the early years, I think there was just sexual contact, but then it went to much more significant sexual conduct. And so what my question is why would a judge conclude that there was a rational basis in the evidence to conclude that she had it wrong about the penetration but correct about the contact?
Well, I don't think it's for the judge to make that decision whether she was wrong or right.
No, if I said it like that way, I apologize. What I said was, or I meant to say, mm-hmm. how would a judge make a conclusion that there was a rational basis in the evidence for a jury to conclude that?
Because the witness testified that there was contact. There was contact prior to the penetration. And if there was contact prior to the penetration, we have to give that jury the opportunity as the finder of fact to make the decision what to believe and not to believe, what to give credit to and what to discredit. So
that's difficult for me to grasp. I mean, I understand the argument, but it's just difficult for me to believe that every time a complainant testifies to sexual penetration, because there may have also been contact with other sexual or intimate parts of the body, that therefore, the on its face, that you give a lesser.
You don't give the lesser simply because you have to give it because there is a basis in fact,
and
a rational
basis.
And
in other cases, there was a basis. And in other cases, the defendant may have denied it or something. Or I can see it being appropriate in lots of circumstances, mm-hmm. but it's hard for me to say that there should be a categorical rule.
Well, I'm not saying categorical rule. What I'm saying is there was testimony here. There was testimony presented to the jury that there was touching prior to penetration, and it came from the complainant's own, or it came from the witness.
Following up on Justice Pollack's question, Mr. Guerrero, given your analysis that there is sufficient evidence for a lesser, I think your argument is that clearly the jury didn't entirely credit the testimony of the complaining witness, right? Because there were some counts in which they failed to reach a verdict, right?
That is correct.
And given that, if I understand your analysis, you're willing to accept that for count three, for example, where the jury failed to reach a verdict. This had to do with, count two. This had to do with the penetration with a penis in her mouth. Assuming the case is remanded and there's a lesser, your suggestion is that because the jury wasn't able to reach a verdict there, you would accept that perhaps the jury would have a verdict, maybe even a compromise verdict, in which they'd find assault three with respect to count two. You understand that possibility?
Are you talking about just sex assault three or assault three?
Sex assault three. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Well, let's get one thing clear, right? It's our position that count four and five are totally separate charges, nothing to do with the charges of which he was convicted of.
I'm referring to count two, though, where there was a hung jury, as I understand it, right?
Yes.
So if we remand and there's an instruction for a lesser included, they may well find the lesser included with respect to count two, by thinking that as the facts unfolded, actually there was just contact as opposed to penetration. If I'm following you, is that correct?
If the...
Aren't you arguing that there should have been a lesser instruction, lesser in the sense of sex assault 3 for count 2?
Yes.
Okay, so you can see what's going to happen if it's remanded, right? There's an opportunity for the jury to find the lesser included offense for count 2.
Yes, Your Honor. If there's a rational and if there's a factual and rational basis for lesser included offense.
And you're arguing that there is. That's why you're saying.
That's why we're here.
Mr. Guerrero, are you going to accept that even though the prosecution dismissed counts 2, 4, 5, and 6, it can still be remanded for retrial?
No, it cannot. Because it was the decision of the state to not prosecute those charges. I'm just responding to a question by Your Honor. Your Honor, in this case.
Coming back to the problem of Justice Pollack's question, the jury can always credit some, can credit, doesn't have to credit all of the complaining witness's testimony. So the complaining witness might say, these things happened, he touched me and then he penetrated me, and yet the jury could choose to not believe part of that and believe the rest of it. Why doesn't that provide a factual basis for giving instruction?
I think I've already stated that it should provide it. When there's conflicting testimony, or there's testimony supporting a lesser offense, it should be given. And the more reason why it should have been given and why it should be given is exactly what happened in this case. The jury clearly did not credit the complaining witness's testimony. Maybe we don't know if it's half of the time. Or we don't know which one, but what we do know is this. Even the state themselves, when the jury was unable to make a decision on those charges, the state themselves filed a motion to dismiss. And I'm not saying that the state don't believe her. I'm just saying that the facts speak for itself, and the jury should have been given that opportunity to at least address the lesser included offense to the sex assault 1 counts.
Mr. Guerrero, the jury, is it an overstatement to say that the jury disbelieved her when they didn't find him not guilty? It was a hung jury, wasn't it, on the other counts to which they didn't reach a verdict?
Just so that we can, I never said that the jury disbelieved her. I said that the jury had some concerns. The jury had legitimate concerns that the prosecuting attorney's office also accepted that concern in ultimately dismissing those charges. And what I'm saying is this. There were factual bases. Those factual bases doesn't have to come from the defendant's testimony in court. He certainly has a right not to testify. But there were facts presented in this case requiring that instruction be given. The jury needs to be properly informed of all of the charges.
And that factual basis is that the jury may have only credited part of her testimony. That was kind of your response. In other words, they may have believed her partly, but not entirely. And if we agree with that approach, wouldn't that pretty much require lessers in all cases and all offenses? Because anytime a complainant testified, one could reach the conclusion that they may conclude that it may not have been intentional, it may have been reckless, it may have been negligent. I mean, in other words, it seems like it's a pretty expansive approach, potentially, to justify a rational basis for an instruction simply on the basis that the jury doesn't have to entirely credit the complainant's testimony.
Your Honor, we're jumping ahead. It's the rational basis to give that instruction. And now we're arguing at this point, because the instruction was not given, as to what the jury believed or did not believe. And we have to eliminate that by giving the jury that instruction to begin with, so that they can make their determination. I am not suggesting that we look into the mind of the jury as to what percentage of the witness's testimony, the belief, or this disbelief. What I am only suggesting is, as we sit back and take a look at what happened, jury was not given an instruction despite the fact that there was evidence establishing a rational basis for that lesser included offense. But what we do know when we take a look back, they had some issues. So I'm not suggesting that we take a look and second guess the jury. What I am asking the court to do is the trial court has the responsibility and duty of giving the jury all of the proper instructions. And in this case, they weren't given. So, thank you. I'll save about a minute. Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney Sonia McCullen on behalf of the State of Hawaii. The bottom line here is that the family court properly exercised jurisdiction over this case and properly instructed the jury as to the sex assault in the first degree. It appears that you're most concerned with the jury instructions, so I'll start there. In order to give a lesser included instruction, the court must find that there's a rational basis to acquit the defendant of the charged offense, here the SE1, and convict the defendant of the lesser, which is the SA3. Excuse me. Here there's just no rational basis to convict defendant of that lesser SA3. To be honest, I'm not even sure what act we're talking about. defendant doesn't identify a specific act, and there was nothing in the record to say that defendant's penis or finger touched anything else on the way to penetration. And without some kind of evidence like that, a lesser doesn't go in.
Can you address in the testimony that Justice Wilson and I have both been asking about, I think it's pages 80 and 84 of the transcript, where she describes what happened to her and is talking about that he was prior to penetration, at the time of penetration, he'd be touching her breasts or her buttocks. Why wouldn't that be a basis?
So those were addressed in separate counts. And what Arceo says is that each individual act is a separate offense. And what Barrett appears to do is almost treat this conduct as a continuing course of conduct. If there was indeed a touching during the penetration, that would have been a separate act, according to our sale.
But if you could clarify, Ms. McCullen, your point about how they were charged as separate acts, because my understanding is that the time period of September the 18th, or shall we say September 2008 till September 2013 was covered in counts 4, 5, and 6, and then you had counts 1, 2, and 3 cover the same part of the same period, right, for the 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So why wouldn't it be legitimate to say that actually they weren't alleged just separately, because the record could be interpreted to mean that during the time that the Class A's were being committed, the two-year period, there was a touching of the breasts and a touching of the buttocks.
As a lesser included offense of the
Yeah, well, I mean, it wasn't just separate. It wasn't just charged with respect to counts 4, 5, and 6. It also was included in the acts that were alleged for counts 1, 2, and 3.
I would disagree with that. I would, if there was.
Well, counts 1, 2, and 3 were September 30th, 2011 to September 19th, 2013, and there's no indication that the allegations of touching breasts and the buttocks was limited to the time period outside of that.
So we're looking at the periods, and within any time during that period, there was a touching of the breasts or buttocks. It's covered by one of the, it's covered by, I believe, 4 and 5. And
I'll grant you that. I'll grant you that. I'm just saying it seems to have also been covered by counts 1, 2, and 3, which is one reason why giving a lesser included instruction would seem to make sense. I mean, you're.
It doesn't make sense because if at the time there was a separate touching, it would be charged as a separate incident. It's not part of the penetration. We can't subsume any touching that happened during the penetration is a separate act. It's not subsumed within the penetration.
What I mean, Mr. Guerrero's point is there's an indication here that the jury was unable to credit the testimony of the complaining witness for a number of counts. So if that's the case, if they hung on those counts, why wouldn't, I think his point is, why wouldn't one conclude that with respect to counts 1 through 3, the jury could have found that they didn't really credit the testimony of the penetration, but something happened and therefore there was touching?
What the jury communication said was some jurors are not able to come to a decision based on lack of physical evidence. And that's how they came to a decision on counts 1 and 3 because
doesn't that
the doctor
make,
testified.
But that wasn't that, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but doesn't that support my point that the jury was saying there wasn't enough physical evidence of penetration, and then if they were concerned about that.
I think they believed that there was enough evidence as to the penetration.
Well, not exactly. They didn't really come to that conclusion with respect to count 2, right?
Isn't the difference between counts 1 and 3 and 2, 4, 5, and 6 the time frame? Because with respect to the touching, she testified that he started touching her when she was 7 or 8 years old. And then when she was 10 or 11, which is counts 1, 2, and 3, that's when he started penetrating her and the penis in the mouth also. But in the, no, actually, no, the penis in the mouth, she never testified as to the time frame. And so, you know, the issue was, I don't know.
Well, in
the jury thought that she didn't remember enough of when she was 7 or 8 years old as compared to when she was 10 or 11 years old.
Well, at page, in the transcript of page 121, she testifies that the penis was put in her mouth in about September 18th, 2013.
Well, I think the difference between counts 1 and 3 and 2, 4, 5, and 6 is the doctor's testimony of the notches in the hymen, and that is consistent with objects, including penis and finger, being inserted into the vagina. But if there were, if that was the situation, it's more likely the state would have charged each one of those touchings as a separate offense. But yes, it could be the basis of a lesser, depending on how the facts play out.
That's not the way this case is.
This is not the way, yeah.
You're
correct for the penetration of in counts 1 and 3. And I think part of the problem stems from the language or the rationale in Berendt. And it seems that Berendt doesn't comport with 701-109-5. It doesn't do the analysis. It kind of glosses over the first part, and then it creates an inference, and it's almost like the jury is making up these facts. And it appears that by doing so, we're actually creating a per se rule that it should go in. And if that's the case, we're nullifying 701-109-5.
It would also seem we're creating a situation, it seems to me, that by giving these lessors when, say, the complainant has simply testified what's happened to her or him, that by giving lessors when there's no dispute in the evidence, I mean, the jury can disbelieve the complainant entirely, but we're almost setting up compromise verdicts in the sense that it doesn't benefit either the government or the defense to give lessors when there's nothing in the testimony that contradicts the complainant's version.
Actually, I agree, and I believe it's actually unfair to the defendant, because to convict a defendant, a jury has to unanimously agree as to a specific act. I mean, that's what RCO says. And if we're saying, well, we're just going to infer that there was a touching prior to the penetration, what act is the jury unanimously agreeing to? And does the defendant even have notice at the time of this act that, I don't know, we're kind of making up? So I believe it's very problematic to assume that a penetration is preceded by the touching.
Well, help me, Ms. McCollum.
I think that's kind of a layman's assumption, but that's not what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with specific statutory definitions, and the definition of penetration and contact is basically mutually exclusive. Contact says it doesn't include penetration, and so you have two completely separate acts, and so it's hard to say that one is subsumed with another, so that is a continuous course of conduct.
I'm sorry, which statute is that? That says
the 70.
The definition section?
Definition,
okay.
Yes.
I'm not sure how that necessarily leads to your conclusion that there shouldn't be a lesser, because if it's clear that, in from your point of view, contact doesn't mean penetration, then in this case, you could see in the record that there's allegations of contact, right?
Yes, and they're covered by the other counts.
Well, not exactly, because the testimony about penetration is that when there was penetration, there was also touching of the breasts and the buttocks during that time period. But with respect to the idea that there would be nothing in the testimony to contradict the complainant's version, isn't it clear that there was something that contradicted the complainant's version because there was a hung jury?
I don't agree with that, no.
Well, okay. How do you come to the conclusion that there wasn't any evidence that would contest the testimony of the complaining witness when you have four counts where the jury didn't go along with the position of the government?
I can't explain what's in the mind of the jurors, but apparently based on the communication and the actual convictions, they wanted some type of physical evidence to corroborate the minor's statements,
which isn't
required.
At
least one.
But doesn't that mean that they wanted testimony to corroborate the complaining witness's testimony? Isn't that what you just
said?
They
wanted physical evidence.
Right. So didn't that mean that they couldn't accept the complaining witness's testimony without physical evidence?
I think I wouldn't make that assumption.
It appears that at least one juror believed that corroborating physical evidence was required for a sexual assault conviction. which is actually not the law, but it appears that that's what one juror thought. But let me get back to what you said in terms of your, the definitions. I hadn't really focused on that. You know, 707-700 does define sexual contact as any touching other than acts of sexual penetration. So this statute says that sexual contact cannot be sexual penetration. And so I'm trying to, so how can sexual contact be a lesser than of sexual penetration?
And when we read that with our stayo, I'm not sure, I don't want to say never. I think there may be testimony that comes out that could.
But what, are you saying that the state, if in one incident, and I believe I have seen this, in one incident where the complaining witness alleges sexual penetration as well as touching of the breasts or other intimate parts of the body, you charge separate counts, even if it's a part of the same incident?
Yes, correct.
And let me just follow that up, because you do have that choice, and yes, what giving a lesser automatically, in a sense, would require, it would require the government in a case, take this case, suppose it's only one incident, suppose the complaining witness testifies that before penetration, I was touched on the breasts and buttocks or something like that. In other words, we're saying to the government, we compel you to charge those, test that incident in three counts, okay? We want to, if you don't, we're going to give a lesser. In a sense, that's what the current law seems to be, because there's an inference that you give a lesser. So we're basically saying to the government, you have to charge this as separate counts, or otherwise we're going to give a lesser if you just charge it as penetration.
That could happen, yes.
And don't you do that sometimes?
Oh, I don't, I mean, I think it appears that if there is a factual basis to charge each separate one, we do.
Well, you can or you can't.
Or you can't, yeah, we don't have to.
Sometimes you choose not to.
Correct.
Usually with children, it's more difficult to charge separately.
It is. It is. So in this case, there's just no factual basis for that, for putting a lesser included of that SA1. And it would seem to violate 701-1095, and it also wouldn't comport with the statutory definitions of sexual contact and sexual penetration. If there's any more questions, I'll go on to the jurisdiction. I just have two comments in the jurisdiction issue. One is, it need not be remanded. The ICA had authority to determine whether the family court had jurisdiction or not. So I don't believe it needs to be remanded. But I would like to ask this court to consider adopting a new definition of physical control. What happens was in Alagao, the ICA adopted actual possession and control based on Chapter 583. Chapter 583 was repealed in 2002 and replaced with Chapter 583A, and 583A has a new definition of physical control, and that definition is physical care and supervision. And it just that definition seems to be more pragmatic.
I'm sorry, is that physical control or physical custody?
Custody. And so the definition is physical care and supervision, and that seems to be a little more pragmatic and realistic as to how adults relate to children, as opposed to possessing and controlling. So in conclusion, the state would like to ask that this court adopt that new definition and perhaps clarify for rent and how it relates to our sale.
I'm a little bit confused. I have to tell you, I am a little bit confused about this because, all right, I'm sorry, and I should have looked at the case law again, but in terms of, like, facts establishing, in that the offense was charged within the statute of limitations or facts establishing venue, we do include it in, like, the instructions, right?
Wait,
because we say on or about, you know, this date in the city and county of Honolulu,
yes,
right? But although 701.114 says, you know, the facts establishing jurisdiction are also have to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. You know, I noticed, like, in this case, there was nothing in the instructions said that the defendant had physical custody.
Correct.
Of the minor.
Well, so it was in the state put it in the indictment, or it was in the indictment, and there was no challenge to it.
Excuse me, that's not a very good explanation. Let me read to you from.
It should correct. It should
remember
be.
Remember Correa? It's like 1980, mid-80s or something, right? And this is what this is the argument, two sentences. The prosecution admits that it was required to prove timely prosecution and proper venue. Nevertheless, it contends that the trial court was not required to instruct the jury with respect to those issues. As a general rule, we disagree. Now, that's mid-80s. Now, subsequent cases have helped you folks in the sense saying, look, it's harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. But, you know, I think what Justice McKenna is asking, why isn't this in your standard instructions? I mean, all you have to do, you can track what's in your indictment.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I have to acknowledge that that's correct. But again, I feel like, again, there's no need to remand it for that. Yes. And so the state.
So your argument is that in this case it's harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. Because there was no dispute as to whether or not he had physical custody.
Yeah, and the facts supported it, mm-hmm. that there was actual control and, actual possession and control during those after-school hours when the assaults occurred. So the state respectfully requests that you affirm conviction.
Just go back on another question. Are you familiar with Justice Sekulba's concurring dissent?
Somewhat. I know he disagreed with.
His position there was that there was testimony that the complaining witness had licked or sucked petitioner's penis, and that the act of licking would not have been penetration and therefore could have been sexual contact. Is that, how would you agree or disagree with his position?
The act of licking could have been.
Sexual contact leading up to the penetration, that was provided.
I think that we'd have to look at the definition of penetration because it actually says penetration is not required for the licking or sucking. I mean, actual penetration, it still qualifies as penetration. So,
you might disagree on that,
right? Yeah, I might, yeah.
Very well.
Thank you.
Your Honor, I'll try to be very brief and again point out that there was, as Justice Wilson and Chief Justice and other members here have recognized, that the complainant did testify at page 80 through 81 that he touched me on my boobs and my butt. The assumption that the other counts, the sex assault third, I believe, four and five address those charges. It's not quite true, because when you take a look at those counts, those were a different time frame. So again, those
encompass part of the same time frame. Well, just added 2 more years from when she was 7 years, or
yes,
4 more years from when she was 7 years old, right?
That's right, 2008. So, I thank you very much, and I would ask the court to remand. Thank you.
Well, thank you to both of our attorneys for your arguments this morning. The court will take this matter under advisement.
Eku iluna, please rise. O malolo ia mai ne kea aha ho o kolo kolo ki e ke hano hano. This Honorable Supreme Court is now recessed.